guys like watching game shows? Just curious. How many of you like watching different game shows? Any of you? Yeah? This side, the middle side, no. The middle section, the outside, yes. Okay. I mean, a lot of people love watching those game shows. There's some that have been on for a long time, some of the most popular ones, like Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune. Of course, you remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? I mean, everybody loved that one. And then this kind of Deal or No Deal. I think they bring that one back in the summer. But it's interesting, you know, all of those game shows, you know, why are those so popular? And why are those so popular to go on? Of course, you know, one of the big reasons is it's a quick way to what? Make some money, of course, yeah. And so, you know, many people, anybody ever been on a game show? Any game show people? No? I remember we have a friend, I can't remember who it was, we had somebody that went on one of those Wheel of Fortune, I think it was, and I don't know if they won any money, I don't remember anyway. But it's interesting, you know, a lot of people also buy lottery tickets, right? Why? Because they think it's a quick way to get money, right? Interesting, is it really free though? Do you know that, I was looking at a statistic, I'm not sure how old this is, just a couple years, but do you know that the U.S. spent $80 billion on lottery tickets in the last couple years, like in a one-year span? $80 billion. And that's not even half of what is spent, $150 billion on sports betting in 1 year. That doesn't take into consideration a lot of others. I mean, you don't even talk about the casinos and things like that. Why? Well, it seems like in the United States, and I'm sure other places, but especially in the U.S., we're kind of obsessed with getting rich, or getting rich quick is even better, right? Now, many other people, many of us don't gamble, but many are still obsessed with wealth as they work harder and harder, more hours. Why? In order to gain more wealth, in order to hopefully gain more things that we hope will bring more meaning and happiness to our life, right? We've kind of touched on that at the very beginning of this series, and we talked about kind of chasing the American dream. Well, it's interesting. As you think about the pursuit of wealth, though, you think about it, and all the money that maybe we can have, all the money you can buy in the world cannot buy you a happy marriage, can it? It can't buy you the love of a child. It can't heal a disease, ultimately, it can't ultimately bring joy. And yet, we think of all the things that money can give, and yet some of the most important things that we would say are a part of our lives, money cannot ultimately buy. And yet, when you talk about life, right? This series, we are saying, let's talk about life in Ecclesiastes. When we talk about life, one of the things that we need to discuss, and a lot of people don't like discussing, is wealth or money or the things that we can buy from money. And yet this is an important topic that actually Solomon comes back to a number of times. And he looks at it, and it's interesting. Today we're going to see, once again, Solomon's talking from personal experience, right? He's talking from personal experience once again. And as he's kind of evaluated his life, and as we said, he is at the end of his life. He's in the older years of his life, a lot of experience. And he's writing this journal that we call Ecclesiastes, and he's kind of given us some conclusions of things that he has learned. And one of the things that God has taught him, I believe he's going to show us today, is that pursuing life through wealth is meaningless. Ultimately, if that's really what your life is all about, he said, I've tried it, I've done it, and it really hasn't brought meaning to my life. Now, Solomon is definitely one that can talk about wealth, okay? From doing some reading, it seems that Solomon brought in $20 million, kind of in our time, right? In our economy, $20 million of gold every year. Now, that doesn't even include all the imports and exports that he did, nor does it include his taxes that he got from his people, nor does it include kind of the perks of being a king, right? Or kind of maybe some of us are familiar with the kings, king and queens, Queen Sheba, who brought all this stuff to Solomon just to make him richer. I mean, like he needed more, right? And yet, he is obviously one of the most wealthy people that ever lived, and certainly in his time, he was, if not the wealthiest, one of the most. Matter of fact, all of his utensils were made of pure gold. You ever ate from pure gold? I don't know if it tastes any better or not, but you know. He also, of course, we know he built this amazing palace, right? And these parks that he had. Why do I mention all this? Well, because Solomon was a person who experienced the life of wealth, right? And so he may have a little bit to know as he's talking about wealth. Now, some people may have good things to say, wise things to say, some may not. But Solomon wants us to know that, you know, if this world and all of its material wealth, this life under the sun, right? Remember life under the sun, life without really considering God in their lives. He's saying, you know what, if this is what it's all about, he came to the conclusion that it's meaningless. Solomon maybe had something to show to us, some knowledge, maybe some wisdom actually, to share with us this morning. So again, look with me. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 5. 10, we'll start with 10 through 17, then we'll finish up the chapter in a few moments. But look at verses 10 through 17. He says this, "Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. This too is meaningless. As goods increase, and so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? The sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether they eat a little or much. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them, seems like no sleep. I've seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there's nothing left for them to inherit. Everyone comes naked from their mother's womb, and as everyone comes, so they depart. They take nothing from their toil that they can carry in their hands. This too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain, since they toil for the wind? All their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger." A lot in there. We're going to kind of dive into that. We see here the teacher, right? He called himself the teacher. He's sharing from personal experience, kind of as his view as king over a nation. He's looking at not just himself, but over a lot of people, okay? Those who were pursuing their lives through wealth and through the accumulation of as much as they could get, and that surely they thought would bring purpose and meaning. And yet he shares here that really when you're pursuing that, when that's really your heart, he says there's a lot of risks when you pursue wealth. There's actually risks of those who get what they wish for. Let's look at we saw in verse 10, at the very beginning, he says, those who love money, those who love wealth. Notice that word love. It doesn't say those who have wealth, but those who love, or we could put in there also covet or desire more and more. How much is enough for those who love money? How much is enough? A little bit more, right? Always a little bit more. You know, the truth is, our hearts, my heart is fickle. It's kind of a funny word, but my heart is fickle. It pulls me away from contentment, right? I mean, as I say this, as we're going to talk about, this isn't just for the multi, the millionaires that we're talking about there, for the Solomons who have it all. It's talking about me and you. Our hearts are fickle when it comes to contentment and our cravings for more and more. I believe deeply that it's part of our sinful nature. You know, we always want more. And one of the risks of believing the accumulation of money can provide us happiness, can provide us meaning, can give us joy, is that ultimately we come to this idea that we can never have enough. We'll never have enough. See, there's two sides to this. You can have a lot of money and still want more and more, right? Or you can have very little money and still want more and more. It doesn't matter where you're at. It's kind of a heart issue. It really is. It's a heart issue. Those who love wealth are never satisfied with their income, he says, whether you have a lot or whether you have a little. It doesn't matter how much stuff you have either. There's always something more. Why? Because it's a heart issue. Because if you don't have the Lord, you're always looking for something to fill that void, right? That desire for purpose and meaning. You might have the same heart problem, not physical heart problem, but the kind of soul problem as a middle-aged man. It was a cartoon that I saw this week, and he's lying on the psychologist's couch, right, counselor. And the counselor's sitting in the chair next to him, kind of the typical, let's listen to what this guy's problems are. He has a little notebook, shows him writing in it. And the man on the couch, little bubble above his head, or he's talking, says, I drive a Mercedes, I have a beach house in Bermuda. I have a 12-room penthouse and a large yacht. My clothes are made by the finest tailors in London. But he says, but I'm still not happy. The counselor asked him, just kind of scratched it, do you have a Rolex? The troubled man raises his head from the couch, points his finger at the sky, why, no, I don't. That must be it. Right? How many of us are like that? Oh, wait, that's not one other thing. That maybe, I know this stuff. I thought it would make me happy. Doesn't, but maybe this over here will. Right? Such is the risk of loving wealth and pursuing life through wealth. You never have enough. You never experience. You never really come to that true meaning. Kind of is elusive. It's always out there. Right? We're always grabbing for something more. Some of you, maybe younger people, you haven't heard of him, but one of the richest Americans of all time during his time was John D. Rockefeller, multimillionaire. There's a lot to his story I could share, but anyway, I'm just sharing one little. A reporter asked him a question when he was in his prime, and he said, which $1 million that you earned is your favorite? To which Rockefeller replied, the next million. He was never satisfied, and if you know his life, it did not end well at all. In fact, he killed himself. You know, we're not naturally content when our life is focused on things under the sun, when we're just looking at life here on earth without any perspective of God in our lives, or maybe we have God, we go to church, but without any commitment really to God, we're always looking for that next thing. Now, most of us, as I kind of mentioned earlier, most of us don't see ourselves as wealthy, okay, compared again to many other people. But the question I want you to think about, okay, if that's where you are, most of us probably, maybe all of us here would think, I'm not wealthy, but let me ask you, where's your heart? And it's this between you and God. You know, God's the one talking to you. I'm just kind of being a spokesman to get you to think and allow him to speak to your heart. But, you know, are you always needing that one more thing to find contentment or happiness? We're going to talk about that at the end here. Another risk Solomon points out in the pursuit and the accumulation of stuff is that he says, actually, instead of leading to joy and happiness, it actually leads to frustrations. Listen again to verse 11, what he says. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owners except to feast their eyes on them? You see, one of the frustrations when you have stuff is that others consume them. You ever experienced that? Dads? We're talking about Father's Day, right? You ever experienced that? All of a sudden, you get something and it's gone. Why? Well, because the kids took it, maybe. But there's other things. How about just when you get your paycheck, you look at it. I remember when my kids first started working and they would get a paycheck. And they're like, well, how come I don't get this over here, right? Because taxes, right? What do I take off first? Taxes, Uncle Sam, as we say. You know, good old Uncle Sam, let's take some of our money. Or what about another company that takes over your company and maybe you're laid off and all of a sudden there's the frustration of that? Or sometimes how about health problems? And if you've been out of work because of health problems, all of a sudden your income isn't what it used to be, or even bad investments, okay? Or the stock market taking a dive. But you know, it's not just those things outside, but it's also, you know, the wealth that consumes, like I mentioned, with children, or especially, you never heard about, you know, those who win the lottery, all of a sudden they have many more relatives they never knew about. Friends from high school, hey, remember I was your good buddy, you know? And it's true, it's kind of, we laugh at it, but when you hear about that, when people find out, all of a sudden they, well, you know, you got a lot to share, and all of a sudden it can be easily consumed. One person has said this, more money, more people. More people, more worries. More worries, less sleep. See, if others don't consume it, it can consume you, right? If others don't consume it, money can consume us, or things can consume us. Verse 12, he said, the sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he has a lot to eat or a little. In other words, just working and enjoying life, he says, you can sleep. But as for the rich, their abundance permits them no sleep. It's interesting. They've actually done surveys on that, and it's literally true that those who have more actually have more stress. You think it'd be less stress, right? But what are we going to do, you know? For many, it keeps them up night after night. We often only see one side of wealth, and we think of the good stuff, right? We think of all the things that we can do or have, but we don't often see the other side that people don't often show until later, or we see a crisis, we hear about, you know, movie stars or sports stars who are bankrupt or who have to go to counseling or whatever because it's consumed them and they have so much pressure. It consumes. They're always thinking and scheming or wondering, how can I save my money from other people, or how can I build my business bigger to be the best? There's always something more. Don't believe the motto. I heard that. I actually read this this week in some article I was reading. You know, where I can't remember what movie star. Some people were saying, you know, you can sleep when you're dead. You know, it's kind of the motto. Work hard. You don't need sleep. It's all about what you can get. Becoming the best movie star, or becoming the best business person wherever you're at, or becoming whatever it is. And as we're going to talk about in a moment, God's not against us having a successful business. It's not against us becoming better at what we do. But are those things the things that we pursue in our lives? Is that what we pursue, or is God? Now, I'm not God, right? But God says in his word that he gives us things to enjoy. Again, he's not against successful business or gaining promotions, but when you allow that to be your pursuit, it will lead to frustration. Some of you maybe have experienced that, even if you've gotten there. It doesn't give real meaning. As Solomon's saying this morning, he's saying, you know what, pursuing life simply for that next thing, pursuing life for wealth or that next promotion or that next thing won't bring you that meaning that you're really looking for. Now, most of us would say, well, yeah, okay, well, let me try it first. You know, we want to try it. Solomon said, you know what? It's not worth the try. I've done it. It really hasn't worked. But look at verse 13 and 14, some more risks that actually come. He says in verse 13, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owners, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when they have children, there's actually nothing left for them to inherit. Another risk of wealth is that we clutch it, right? We clutch it. It's a risk that it can quickly, when we clutch something, it can quickly disappear, or as I say here, it can quickly crash. It's easy to hoard. Now, some of you maybe seen the TV show. I think I've seen it once, but The Hoarders, or there's some shows like that. And that's not what we're talking about here, you know, where your house is full of stuff. But we're just talking about the idea, that motive. This is mine. It's kind of like my wife kind of gives me a hard time. I watch Lord of the Rings every year, like around this time. I just watch portions and, my precious, you know, the ring. Precious. And what he all, you know, Gollum wants it, needs it back. And even toward the end, Frodo is consumed, begins to become consumed by it. Won't let anybody else touch it or look at it. And we can become like that with our stuff, can't we? When we are selfish rather than generous, when holding on with a closed hand rather than an open hand, that, okay, yeah, this, I have this, but this, it's not mine. Okay, God has given it to me. We can open ourselves instead. We can open ourselves to bitterness rather than to blessing. Wealth, the things that we have, can cause bitterness rather than be a blessing from God. Think about it like this. Wealth is kind of like a viper, you know, a snake, which is harmless if a person knows how to handle it, right? But if you, what do you do? You know, if you don't know how to handle it, if you hold it tightly, what happens? You get bit, right? And it's the same with finances, same with wealth, same with things we have. If we know how to handle it God's way, it can be a blessing. But if we don't, we hold on it too tight, or we don't know how to handle it, it can bite us. Solomon says wealth can be lost also through misfortune. As the saying goes, you know, easy come, easy go. Have you ever used that phrase in your life? Some of us have experienced that in different things. You know, it can be lost so quickly for some through gambling. It can be lost through maybe losing your job or bad health, a misguided adventure, or all kinds of sudden reversals of fortune that you didn't see coming. Go and interview people on the street who are homeless, some, and see why they're there. Many of them, it's because of, you know, poor choices with drugs or alcohol. But for many of them, if you actually see it, many of them, it started with a bad fortune, a misfortune that came into their life. They lost their job. They got hurt on the job. When that is our life, when things are our life, when money and stuff is what we truly love or are pursuing, ultimately it's not going to bring meaning, Solomon says. That's the risk of loving wealth. It could disappear pretty quickly, and then what? But we need to look at the other side as well. We all know of people who have lots of stuff, who are wealthy, and who seem to be doing well. They're happy. We look at them, they're doing well. It seems to have paid off for them. And you know what? There's people like that. God says, you know, the godly and the ungodly he blesses with the things of this earth. They have all they want. They seem happy, not frustrated. But Solomon, it's interesting. He wants us to look at the big picture, okay? He wants us to look at something that we tend to ignore. We never want to think about. You know what that is? Death. Now, for most of us, think that's a long ways away. Others of us may think, well, it's not that far away. But listen again to verse 15 and 16. He says, everyone comes naked from their mother's womb. Never seen anybody come out with a gold ring on their hand, or I don't know. As everyone comes, so they will depart. They take nothing from their toil that they carry in their hands. He says, this too is a grievous evil. As everyone comes, so they depart. And what do they gain since they toil for the wind? For the wind. God's word says this, you're ultimately going to leave it behind. You're ultimately going to leave it behind. You can't take it with you. Paul says the same thing to a young man, Timothy, who's going into ministry. He's saying, you know what? Let's start evaluating your life now. And he says in 1 Timothy 6:7, for we brought, same thing here, he's probably quoting Solomon, for we brought nothing into the world, we can take nothing out of it. Steve Jobs, you guys know that name, Apple? He died in 2011 of cancer, if I remember right. You know how much he was worth? $10.2 billion. You know how much he took with him? You know how much you're taking with you? The same as Steve Jobs. Jesus said this in Luke 12:15. Be on your guard. Why do you say be on your guard? Because as I mentioned in the beginning, our tendency is always want more. He says, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A person's life does not consist in the abundance of their possessions. Jesus is saying what Solomon says, what he, by the Holy Spirit, spoke to Solomon, saying pursuing life through wealth is meaningless. It's not ultimately going to get you what you want. A better perspective to have is what Philip Ryken, he's an author, he's actually current president of Wheaton University, said this. He said, God has given me money, possessions to enjoy for the time being, and to give away for the work of his kingdom, but I always need to remember that I will never be able to take it with me when I die. That's an eternal perspective. That's a truth that we need to learn. It's a truth that Solomon eventually did learn. So we've kind of looked at people who are enjoying life, and maybe they're very wealthy and it seems like things are going well. But you know what? There's another side as well. We probably also know people, or we've heard of people who, because of wealth, it has ultimately ruined them or ruined their lives. Verse 17, Solomon says this, all their days they eat in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. Some will end up in life with frustration, with anger, with affliction, and he says, all alone. Because why? Because they've allowed that to consume them. That's been more important to them than any other relationship. I mean, what is one of the top three things that couples argue about in marriage? Money, right? There's a few others, the top three, but money is right there. It's one, two, or three in every piece. And it's interesting that, you know, we argue about money. You say, how much did you spend on that? Why did you spend so much? What did you spend it on? Or maybe it's another area, you know? Maybe somebody gets into gambling, Or maybe you get into debt because you have credit cards and you think, well, I'm going to pay it off, but eventually you can't. And all of a sudden, your whole life is stressed out about that and it tears apart people, doesn't it? Unfortunately, those who love wealth more than their spouse often end up alone. Or for many, you can still be in a marriage and yet you're living a life of frustration, of anger, of afflictions that ultimately see the consequences of pursuing life and happiness through what you hope wealth can offer. You think, if we just have more, if we just go on more vacations, then our marriage would be better. If we just had more of these things that we could do or have, then we would have a better marriage. But yet, very rarely does that happen. And we can use our money on entertainment. We can use it on technology, right? The newest technology, the newest iPhone, iPad, you know, or whatever, TV. The perfect vacation, but it's never enough. Why? You ever thought about that in our own lives? Again, I confess, there are still times where I'm like, man, I really want that, you know? Why is that? And yet when I get it, oh, okay, that's nice. And it's like, you know, you kind of, after a while, it's kind of like when you give your kids a new, you know, game station, and the next one comes out, and they're not happy with that one. They need the next one, you know? And we're the same way many times. Why is that? Well, I think God created that within us. You think, what? I do. I think God created that, in a sense, emptiness. He created us to find meaning, not in stuff, but in Him. He wanted it so that when we pursue things, we find it ultimately meaningless. It doesn't fulfill. Why? Because our heart, our lives are to be meant to be filled by Him. Now, it can fulfill us for a little while, and it does. But ultimately, if we all are true to ourselves and honest, we realize we're always looking for something more. All this is to expose us to our need for God, to drive us to Him, to find our lasting, yes, and eternal meaning and purpose in Him. It's meaningless without the Lord. And that's what Solomon discovered, okay? And God allowed him to kind of discover that for us. And there's other people in the Bible we see too, but Solomon was certainly kind of the big example. And we have this book of Ecclesiastes. We have the Proverbs, many of them. But I hope it doesn't take us that long. I hope it doesn't take you to the end of your life. Maybe now is a good time to start to realize, okay, yeah, if I'm honest, that's really kind of what I'm pursuing, even though I'm a Christian. See, you can still be a Christian and still pursue those things. Those are things that you really, really are the most important things to you. Look with me at the end, though. Let's get some encouragement, some challenge here, encouragement of kind of another side. Verses 18 to 20, he ends this section. He says, this is what I've observed to be good, however, that it's appropriate for a person to eat, to drink, and find satisfaction in their toilsome labor under the sun during the few days that life has given them here on earth, for that is their lot. Moreover, when God gives someone wealth and possessions and the ability to enjoy them, to accept their lot and to be happy in their toil, this is actually a gift of God. They seldom reflect on the days of their lives because God keeps them occupied with the gladness of their heart. God is telling us here through the teacher, through Solomon, that you know what? We can find contentment. You can find joy in what God has given to you. You can, rather than always looking for more, you can find contentment and joy in the blessings God has given to you. Solomon was honest about the meaninglessness of searching and pursuing things, but he's also honest with us here about finding joy in what God has blessed you with, given you. This phrase, eat and drink, it's mentioned actually six times. It's kind of, you'll see this if you read Ecclesiastes, and if you're here with us a lot this summer, you'll hear this. We've heard it once already. This idea of eating and drinking, right? And enjoying life, this idea is about companionship. When you eat and drink, it's about relationship. It's about joy and satisfaction in life. He's talking about this idea of being together. Some of you will do today, or maybe you've done this weekend, where you're together with family and friends, and you're enjoying life, whether you have a lot or whether you have a little. It's not about that. It's about the contentment of being and enjoying the blessings that God has given to you. God created us for relationships. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. Relationships with others and with Him. Now notice earlier in all those verses we just read earlier, there was no mention of God, right? And yet we see these last three verses, God is mentioned three times. The key to money, the key to the things that we buy isn't necessarily how much you have, but rather how you view it and how you handle it. The Apostle Paul agrees with Timothy, and he says this to Timothy in 1 Timothy 6, verse 6 and verse 8. He says, "But godliness with contentment is great gain." With contentment. And he says, verse 8, "But if I have food and clothing, I can be content with that." And Solomon says here, we just read, he says, find satisfaction. Satisfaction. Another word for that is contentment. Find contentment in your life. In other words, be content. Be satisfied in God. You can enjoy your work. You can enjoy your spouse. You can enjoy the things that God has given you. You can enjoy your home and the possessions that God has given to you if you learn in all that, to be content. But too many of us as Christ followers, we miss out on that because we kind of follow along with what the world is saying, that you're missing out if you don't have more or this extra thing. And we can be so concerned with that that we fail to enjoy, to be content, to show gratitude in what God has given to us. And we begin, instead of enjoying the giver, we simply seek the gifts, right? Let me share a few principles I saw this week of contentment. They're on the screen, I believe, as well. One is that the key to contentment in one's finances is not about what one makes, but rather a willingness to live within that amount. Interesting. Another one, financial contentment has less to do with money and more about your attitudes, about your belief systems, and about your decisions. Where does your attitude, where do your beliefs come from? How do you make your decisions? Are they based on the relationship with God? Be content, he says, or one person says, with what you have and what God has entrusted to you. On the other hand, he says, I'm not content to sit around and do nothing just because we've been blessed. Contentment isn't laziness. I think that's something important. Is contentment does not mean you're lazy. It doesn't mean you don't work hard. It doesn't mean you don't seek to better yourself, okay? This last one says this, being content does not mean we should cease from becoming more financially successful. Nor does it mean that we never desire to make another purchase, okay? We're not saying to be, you know, go and be a hermit, right? And have sell everything and have nothing. He says, however, here's the key. If we find our value in things, if we find our value in things, or our budget is skewed by indulging in overpurchasing, any hope for contentment is destroyed. Because we all have an appetite for more. Okay, that's something you're going to be battling against, I believe. Maybe some of you have conquered that. Great, God's worked in your life. Some people are that way. They don't need that. But for many of us, we're going to have that battle that never is kind of satisfied in our human nature. And the way to curb that is by making sure God is first and learning to be content with what God provides. It's a lifetime struggle. One of the ways you can overcome that is to simply enjoy God's gifts. To see them as God's gifts, not as what you deserve or what you've earned, but everything that we have is from God. When we know God, when we have a relationship with Jesus, we can enjoy God and the gifts that He's given to us. Solomon says, we can enjoy the wealth and possessions that God has given to us. He says, enjoy those things. Seems like almost a contradiction, doesn't it? All this stuff he's just been saying earlier, now he says, go ahead and enjoy it. Is that a contradiction? Not necessarily. Listen to what the Apostle Paul says in 1 Timothy 6:17. He says, command those who are rich in this present world not to be arrogant, okay, nor to put their hope in wealth, we've been talking about that, which is so uncertain, but to put their hope in God, who richly provides with us with everything for our, what does it say? Enjoyment. enjoyment. It's not just what we have that's a gift from God, but actually to be able to enjoy it is a gift from God. You ever thought about that? To actually be able to enjoy and to have a proper perspective on what we have is a gift from God that many people don't receive, unfortunately. The key factor, of course, is God. You can enjoy, and we all do, especially living here in the U.S., we can enjoy the material blessings as God has designed. As we are, listen to this, as we are completely dependent and find our meaning in Him. Having things and enjoying them as gifts from God, not as things I deserve or I need or that I need to fulfill who I am or to make me feel like I'm a good person or a better person than you are. The world that God created is full of many gifts, but the power to enjoy those gifts don't lie in the gifts themselves. They don't lie in ourselves. The power to really enjoy them comes in a relationship with God. The ability to really enjoy family and friendships and food and work and we might call wealth or any other gift comes from God. The greatest enjoyment, listen, this is a powerful thing. The greatest enjoyment of life comes through knowing God through a relationship with Jesus. Without the Lord, we will pursue the gifts rather than the giver of the gifts, right? That's what many people are doing. We're pursuing the gifts rather than the giver of gifts, which, as we saw, Solomon wants to know, when you do that, you're going to have frustrations. You're going to have some of those frustrations. You're going to have, he even says, possibility of a miserable life. Now, many of us maybe don't experience that, but there are some who do. And we know some who are experiencing that, unfortunately. So here's a question. Have you turned from the weariness and frustration of pursuing wealth to pursuing Christ? Solomon and Apostle Paul are teaching us to depend on God for our enjoyment, for our satisfaction, rather than the things, rather than that next vacation, rather than the homes, rather than things that money can buy. See, those things, again, those can be a blessing or they can be a curse. It really is a lot on how what you think will bring you meaning and satisfaction. So as we close, as Americans, I want us to know that we are among the wealthiest people, right, in the world. Every single one of us here is wealthy. When we compare ourselves, however, to Steve Jobs or to the multimillionaire sports stars or to those people that we know that have a bigger house or a bigger bank account than us, then we don't see that. But you know what? Let's not compare ourselves to the 1%. That's the 1%. Let's compare ourselves to the 90 and above percent, at least 90%. That's conservative, maybe up to 93%. 93% of the rest of the world that we, that you and I are much wealthier than. God calls us wealthy. This passage is for you and for me. And too many of us, as American Christians, can buy the lie that pursuing wealth is what will bring us happiness. Where's your heart? Where's your heart? Are you finding contentment in God? First and foremost, we see from Solomon and Paul that God has provided these things for us, many of the things we have, for our enjoyment, but also to be a blessing. Because we learned, those who are at the beginning of the year, we talked about an extravagant heart. Does that sound familiar? Remember, we talked about an extravagant heart. What's an extravagant heart? A generous, giving heart. And that all different areas, and that certainly applies to our wealth we talked about. Are you still developing that extravagant heart? I hope that describes you, someone who is extravagant, generous, and content in all that God has given to us. May our lives not be about pursuing the wealth around us, because ultimately, I can promise you, God says it's meaningless. Ultimately, it's going to leave you anyway. But rather, find contentment and joy in what God does bless you with, and make sure that you're being generous with it. Let us enjoy the life that God has given to us. Let us enjoy the greatest gift, the most wealthy thing that we can have, which is, as we sung earlier, our relationship with Jesus. Jesus as our Savior. May He bring to me and to you true and lasting meaning and purpose. I hope that this message will speak and continue to speak to your heart, even as we go through this week and really through our lives, that we would truly not pursue the lie of pursuing wealth, but rather pursue Jesus and allow him to develop within us an extravagant, generous heart for him and others. Amen? Let me invite our worship.